ओम ज्ञानचिमिदं हस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकं चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Thank you for allowing me to address all of you dedicated preachers in Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, going to every town and village in the world, including towns and villages in these desert countries. It was not thought that Krishna consciousness could spread. I feel a little uncomfortable being here. This is the first time in 35 years that I've addressed a group of devotees dressed in this kind of clothes. I mean, physically I feel even uncomfortable. I'm sure you're more used to going back and forth between the two worlds, but for me this is something new. I'm going to address a few points. I'm not sure if I'm going to be going over points that you've already covered, so excuse me if there's any redundancy. I'll start with an anecdote which is described in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, that Achyutananda Swami was with Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur. I just saw him a few days ago. He's living in Alachua, in the Alachua devotee community. After many years, he's back with devotees. I told him that he should, if he comes to South India, every week in South India, at least once a week, people ask me about him. He made such an effect back then in the 1970s. I said, it's all old men. He said, yeah, I am also old now. So he was a young man at that time, and he went with Srila Prabhupada to Navadvip to visit two ashrams of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers. So one was Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj's ashram, where they saw that there were just a few devotees, but they appeared to be very seriously absorbed in bhajan and were quite learned. And then they went to Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj's ashram, where there were many more brahmacharis and sannyasis, but the mood seemed to be a little frivolous. That's the impression that comes over. So when they reached back to Mayapur, where at the time there was very little, just a hut, two huts, Achyutananda asked Prabhupada, well, what should we be more like? He said, in the first ashram there were few, but they were very serious. And in the other ashram there were many, but they didn't appear to be so serious. So, Prabhupada, which should we be like? What should be our motto? And Prabhupada said, both. Which didn't mean that we should be a few and frivolous, but that we should be many and serious. So, we find at the present time, especially among Indian Hindus, which constitute Indian people, Hindus and non-Hindus, constitute approximately 1/7 of the world's population. And Indian Hindus, it's no small number. So there's a very big preaching field, and there's very good opportunity. When I say Indian, I mean Indian, Bangladeshi, Pakistani, Nepali, Sri Lankan, this South Asian. Now there's very good scope for spreading Krishna consciousness very widely, and you've all been very successful in doing that. My request or cautionary word is that in spreading widely, we shouldn't sacrifice quality. I'm not accusing anyone. I know that you are also concerned with quality, but it is important not just to bring people in, more and more people in, and train people up enough so that they can bring more people in, but it's important at every stage to see that everyone is coming up also. And actually, if everyone is coming up, then automatically they'll be able to bring people in. in a very meaningful way. We're not interested simply in increasing numbers. We're not in competition with all these bogus gurus that sometimes people say, well, how come they have so many followers and we think they're better because they have so many followers? But as there's that story from Hitopadesh that Srila Prabhupada told of the rabbit who, the female rabbit who approached the tigress. It's only in a story because she would have got eaten in real life. But she said, you see, I have 3 litters every year and every time I have 10 babies. And you only have 1 baby every 2 years. And tigress said, yes, but my baby is a tiger. So, Ekas Chandras Tamohanti King Nataragano Picha, Srila Prabhupada would quote, that one moon dissipates the darkness of night more than many millions of stars. So, quantity must, both are required, quantity and quality. There's a famous letter from Srila Prabhupada approximately 1971, the famous statement Srila Prabhupada said that now we have enough centers in those days, and now we should concentrate on boiling the milk. In other words, enriching the lives of the devotees. Of course, Prabhupada never even for a moment stopped widening the movement, but he was concerned also that the devotees become knowledgeable in Vaishnava Siddhanta, and their practices of Krishna consciousness be very strict. Srila Prabhupada, in so many letters, again and again and again, emphasized that devotees, the leaders, the duty of leaders is to see that all the devotees are rising early, attending the programs, chanting minimum 16 rounds, following all the principles. Prabhupada stressed these points again and again and again. So, that's a thought, that quantity and quality also is required. There hasn't been so much problem, as far as I understand, here in the Gulf so far, but probably it will come at some point in time. We have the problem of various marginal or fringe groups coming around and trying to pick off people from our congregation and bring them into their groups, which then work against ISKCON. I'm particularly referring to Ritvikvadis and Neo-Gauriamat groups who think that they are right and everything in ISKCON is wrong, and their duty is to take all our people away, and it's very easy for them especially to take away neophyte members of the congregation, and with a kind of fanatical preaching which appeals to certain class of person. So I'm often asked, what should we do about this? And we can try to counter it by, you see, they'll say, well, ISKCON's bad in this way and that way, and we can try and counter it and say, well, your group is bad in this way and that way. But I see the best way to counter this is to, if our devotees themselves are feeling satisfied in their spiritual life, and they feel that they're getting what they came for, they're getting the substance of Krishna consciousness, that they have the opportunity for understanding what is Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada presented it, and that they're considered as individual persons, they're considered important, that they're not just being used, as sometimes devotees feel they're being used as pawns in someone's project. Sometimes devotees feel that preaching is going on because someone has some project in mind which they want to bring people in to promote some project. Whereas the devotees themselves, they may not be spiritually properly taken care of. Sometimes that's there. There are projects over people. We don't have that much here, I guess, because we don't, at least physical projects in terms of big buildings, we don't have that. Although increasing the numbers, that can also become something like a project. And if we think in terms of numbers, by the end of 2020, we have to have so many devotees. That's all right. But then if we just think in terms of numbers only, instead of considering each individual person, then people, if they may feel used, devotees may feel used, and they feel may feel more inclined to go to somewhere where, or anyway, if there's any sense of discontent, they may feel more inclined to go to some, like this, some groups who make it their mission to poach on the ISKCON preaching. Quality. No, I'll go to another point. This Gulf preaching is unique, preaching among the, mostly among the Hindus in the Gulf. It's a unique situation. Hindus who come here are, it's seen that they're more likely to become religiously committed than if they remain in India. So it's a bit, and especially there are many people of the social class that most of you sitting here come from, the well-educated class, who are good candidates for taking to Krishna consciousness. So it's a unique preaching field. At the same time, you might bear in mind that it is a very artificial situation, and it's extremely artificial. Srila Prabhupada often spoke of the artificiality of modern life. But it's here in the desert especially, it's especially artificial to have any such big mechanized cities where everything's imported in the desert. So while making plans for development, you might also bear in mind that not very soon, but also not very late in time, this whole artificial these artificial cities that have been developed in the Gulf, they're not going to last. I mean, the oil will run out at some point in time. And, well, it's running out all over the world, and maybe 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, it's difficult to say exactly when. It's likely that the oil-based civilization, which we now think of as normal, is going to deteriorate, and it may again become a luxury to for the very richest people to get on a plane and go here and there. So the whole system, so that may be borne in mind that, and of course political upheavals is a very, although these particular countries that you're preaching in appear to be politically quite stable. You're just right next door to some of the most politically unstable places on earth, and the whole Islamic powder keg is there. The tension is there with the Christian or superficially Christian West. And who knows anywhere in the world what might happen, but especially this area has its certain instability, especially for Hindus here. So that's something to be borne in mind also. That's more thinking about the children and how they're growing up. Of course, Srila Prabhupada's response to the artificiality of modern society was to want to found farm communities, which isn't very tenable in this area. But as Srila Prabhupada's long-term vision for our movement was farm-based as a social structure, farm-based rather than city-based. So that's something to bear in mind. Talking about quality of life, quality of life in Krishna consciousness, there is one specific area which I suggest you could try to improve in. And it's very important that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Vishayaranga Kaile Malin Hoy Mon, Mon Malin Hoyle Nahe Krishna Smaran. That if we eat food, the food of materialistic people, then the mind becomes contaminated. And if the mind is contaminated, then we cannot think of Krishna. Out of convenience or whatever, it seems to be very common in our movement these days, not only here in the Gulf, but pretty much everywhere, that a principle that when Srila Prabhupada was present and the movement was ashram-based, it was a very strict principle that hardly anyone thought of breaking, was that we only take food which is prepared by devotees. And I remember in Bhaktivedanta Manor in London that Indian guests would bring huge packets of sweets and devotees wouldn't even touch them. They'd feed them to the cows. And it was when one devotee on traveling Sankirtan bought some cornflakes, it was a scandal. So you can see how times have changed in that regard. But it is important. We may say, well, devotees are going on and they're chanting Hare Krishna, so what does it matter? And for children, they're snacking. They want something all the time to eat. Two suggestions, practical. I don't know how practical they are. That you have to decide. Eating kami bread is not good for devotees, but many devotees do that because they find it convenient. Get a bread making machine. Your own homemade fresh bread will be better. It's a little more work and probably more expensive, but we should only take prasad, and we can't offer this to Krishna actually. It's not proper to offer that kami bread to Krishna. Another suggestion is that there are devotees in different parts of the world who are successfully marketing to the kami world or the broader society bars, like alternatives to Kit Kats. We still have Kit Kats? Yeah, yes. Still going on. It's a perennial favorite. Mars bars. Smarties, these are all things I remember from my childhood. It's still going on, huh? So as an alternative to that, at least in Germany and in America, there are devotees who have successful businesses of making, I know what they call it in Germany, in America, Bhumi bars, Prana bars. They're much more healthy than Kit Kat and Smarties also. So maybe you could import them. You get in contact with the devotees who are producing them. They're all made by devotees and offered to Krishna, and it's all healthy food and tasty food. It must be, otherwise they wouldn't be making a good profit out of it. It wouldn't be a good business. So maybe you could arrange with our catering wing to get them imported and. That's a suggestion. Another point, we're living in the Arabic Muslim world, and we have a duty, those who are living here and preaching here, to do something to try to help them come to Krishna consciousness also. Obviously, it could put our whole preaching to the Hindus, which is quite successful, that's why you're all here, it could put that at risk if we were to directly try to preach to the local Muslims, but I can suggest at least one indirect way, which is also going on, that already there are websites with Srila Prabhupada's writings in Arabic and Farsi. So that could be increased, and in other languages also. So maybe some of the leaders here could look into at least financially helping that, or with some technical support. I think you should try to give something back to the communities that you're living in, and maybe in more open situations like Bahrain or Muscat, maybe there could be some dialogue or some opening, something like that. All right, that's all I wanted to say for now. And if anyone would like to question or comment, please do so. Yeah, do you have a mic?
Maharaj, is there a substitute for cornflakes found by these people in America who are doing the chocolate?
Is there a substitute for?
Cornflakes. Are they doing
that? Not that I know of. Substitute for cornflakes.
My mind was made by devotees, not by cornflakes.
Well, made by devotees. Well, you could make... As a kid, before I joined this world, I used to make my own muesli. It's a very simple thing to do. So you could do that. That's among the health-minded. Actually, south of London, there's an area which is called the Muesli Belt. Do you know what muesli is? You all know what muesli is? Yeah, okay. There's an area called the Muesli Belt. That means stockbrokers, accountants, and so on, who live in somewhat posh houses south of London. They commute in every day, and they're the kind of people that eat muesli for breakfast, because they're somewhat health-minded like that. So you can make your own muesli mixes. And more health-minded people eat muesli rather than cornflakes, which is just junk food, actually. Muesli is more healthy.
Maharaj, this is not about what you spoke about today, thank you, but I wanted to express my appreciation for this fantastic book you wrote about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj's life. It has been a huge, huge inspiration for me, and it opened my eyes about so many things we didn't know about him, and the fantastic research you've done and the insights you've given into Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I just wanted to express my deep thanks to you and recommend all the devotees that they should read this wonderful volume of yours.
Thank you. I'm getting lots of praise for this. My standard response is that it's my great fortune, which undeserved fortune, to have been engaged in this service. There's a lot more work to be done in research, a huge amount, unlimited amount of work to be done in research and writing. We also need, as Srila Prabhupada expressed so many years ago, a Vaishnav University. So, if we had a Vaishnav University, then my vision is that the Vaishnav University should supplant all the universities in the world, which are just teaching rubbish, how to remain in the material world. That's the underlying motto. But all fields of knowledge should be addressed from the Vedic understanding, which means that we have to rewrite all the books and all the curricula of the whole world. There's a lot of work to do, a lot of research, I mean, huge amount of work. There's a lot of work to do. So, that book was just a sample of what needs to be done. And as I wrote in the introduction, it may look like a comprehensive book, but really it's just an overview. We have such a deep and expansive Vaishnav heritage that, as you said, it brought to light many things that you weren't aware of, but there's much, much more. We have such treasure that we're unaware of, as that story is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the the man who was, he didn't know what his treasure was. So he was looking in the north, the south, and the west, and eventually on the eastern side he found the treasure. So we do have very great treasure. This whole Vaishnav culture, philosophical understanding, the broader Vedic culture, our own Gauriya culture is there, then there are the cultures of the various sampradayas. Unfortunately, the Vedic knowledge, both secular and spiritual, although of course they interface, so much of it is getting lost day by day. It's very unfortunate. So that's other projects. Some of you, maybe in your retirement, take it up. There's so many points. The region in each language, each there are so many important writings from the just like in Karnataka, the Kanadas, Purandadas, and then we Telugu, Tyagarajan, and so many. So much Vaishnav heritage is there. This is our wealth. Prabhupada has introduced us to this. Yeah, anything else? Regional languages are also important. Teach the children. Don't bring them up on English only. The very languages are more suitable for the culture with, that goes with Vaishnavism. English is, there's a saying, I don't know if I can get it exactly right, what is that? Speak English to a businessman, German to a horse, French to a woman, and Spanish to God. That was a saying by a Spanish king. So different languages have their own vaishishtya and vaibhav. So Sanskrit is the best language for this culture, understanding the philosophy, and languages that are close to Sanskrit, they're also better for that. So I'm speaking to you all in English. But in Udupi, where I regularly visit, the one devotee told me, one of our ISKCON devotees from that area has told me that he was speaking one of the Madhva pundits who said that we appreciate your ISKCON very much and we're looking forward to the day when we'll speak with your members in Sanskrit. So maybe you could teach the kids Sanskrit also. It's not the most important thing. The most important thing is to chant Hare Krishna. But culturally, ISKCON should lead the world. We have this culture, which is conducive for approaching. He has his own culture. Krishna has his own culture. And that he's given to us. But this Hollywood, Bollywood, Lecher, Chandal culture that's taken over the world, it seems very nice. You see people sit around at tables and then they drink whiskey and eat dead bodies and men and women mix up with each other. This is lower than animal. So we have the highest culture to give the world. We should take it and give it.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Hare Krishna, I have a question, Maharaj. Most of my life, when you said about quantity and quality, I've come across some devotees who are really senior, but I don't derive any inspiration from them. They pose as great devotees, but I don't know whether I'm short of a mission or there is a tussle going on between me, within me, and I feel very depressed. And when we come across certain things which are not as the standards, then when we say them, then they say that you're committing a Vaishnava aparadha and they start blackmailing. So I'm really disturbed with this. So how do I overcome it? Or is it something wrong within me? Or how should I...
Sounds like a very personal issue, which you need to discuss with someone who's personally very close to you. And often the concept of Vaishnava aparadha is used to smash people into... or hammer people into just doing what you want them to do. It is often misused, that's true. But exactly your own personal situation, it's very difficult for me to say just sitting here, not knowing you. So it's better, I don't think this is the right forum to discuss that. I mean, what you're saying is very vague. If you were more clear about it, which we might not want to be in a public forum anyway, then could discuss it in more detail. But that's also important, that devotees do have various hang-ups which they might not want to express. And you know this, that you have to address people's various misgivings. At the same time, we don't want to get too much into it so that our movement becomes like a big psychoanalysis clinic. Good kirtan is the best psychiatric treatment for everyone. So please, you can discuss that with your husband and other seniors. Or if you don't trust the seniors, then try approaching someone else. It does happen that people have their immediate authorities, and for one reason or another, they feel disgruntled with them. That does happen. Yeah, anything else? Yeah, in fact, maintaining a spirit of harmony is you yourself as leaders probably know that, both in the workplace and even among devotees, in this Kali Yuga, which is typified by quarrel and hypocrisy, to maintain synergy. Someone just used that word? And actual harmony is a great challenge. As Srila Prabhupada said, force will not stand. For some time you can force people, but it won't last. Especially in Krishna consciousness. In a workplace, to some extent, you can force people, because you know, if they don't do what the boss says, then they're out on the street. But in Krishna consciousness, people come voluntarily. So we can't force them. The principle of authority is there, but it's voluntary submission to authority. So it's a different management principle altogether. There has to be. The real leader, Srila Prabhupada said that leader in Krishna consciousness means leader in hearing and chanting. About Satsarup Maharaj, he was made one of Srila Prabhupada's first GPCs. When all the original GPC was all Grihasthas, by the way. Are you aware of that? Prabhupada didn't want sannyasis on the GPC, he wanted householders. That's something interesting for all of you. So he was a householder at the time, he was married. And other devotees brought it to Prabhupada that, well, he's notorious as not being a good manager. The Prabhupada said, yeah, but he does whatever I say. So he had the faith to do what Prabhupada said. So Srila Prabhupada often stressed that for leaders, the main, over and above management policies and various, and we've seen so many since I joined ISKCON, in the secular world, there are always some new management theories. At one time there was horizontal and vertical, and then there's this seven habits, which is, I guess you could align that with a lot of what goes on in Hitopadesh. Although this win-win, it's all nonsense, because in the material world, it's all lose-lose anyway. There's no win-win. In Krishna consciousness, it's win-win. That's all. But over and above management formulae, the hearing and chanting about Krishna, the spirit of service to Krishna, that will carry our movement.